Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
And here we are. We have hit a milestone. Maybe a milestone on the road. I don't know.
Anything's possible, really.
This is, in fact, our 50th episode.
Yay!
Notable for the fact that Daniel is, in fact, actually here.
What?
You've missed a lot of the milestone episodes. Just saying, it seemed to be a thing.
I'm allergic to getting older.
Yeah. Now, also to be fair, we have not recorded in quite a while.
True.
And a lot of factors. We were originally going to do a big thing for the 50th involving the...
Jen and Michael and...
Yeah, the Don't Read the Latin folks and Jillian and... Part of the problem was schedules started getting in the way. People suddenly, unexpectedly had to move.
That whole pesky solstice-based holiday that gets thrown in the middle of everything.
And a birthday or two may have occurred.
May or may not have occurred.
So, yeah, it just... And we were holding off, hoping we could get everyone together. And finally, everyone said, don't wait on us anymore.
Yeah. It's now 2017. We have to grab it while we can.
That's right. So hopefully we will do some kind of group recording in the near future. It just wasn't going to be for this one.
Well, you realize if we keep going on pace, we may actually hit our 75th by the end of this year.
Possibly.
70th, maybe. It's a goal.
70th. Yes, things could happen.
Anything's possible.
Even the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Don't panic.
Yep. Yeah. So, with this, since it is our 50th, but it's also the first episode of 2017, we thought we would take this moment to look back at the year that was 2016.
Do we have to? It was kind of a bleak year.
We really should put it to bed.
Yeah.
Put it out of our misery.
Put it to rest, so many of the people that we know and love.
And I think that's kind of where there's no way we could do a memoriam or retrospective of all the significant people we lost during the year. And we talked about it throughout the year. You go back to listen to this last year's episodes, and seems like every episode or every other episode we were... RIPing someone new.
Oh, and multiple people.
Yeah.
I mean, there was the one, I remember this wonderful summary where this guy is being flabbergasted. He's like, we lost Bowie and Rickman? That's, he's like, that's January.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Moving on. Now we have this, and now we have this, and now we have this. So, yeah, it was a rough year in a lot of ways. And to be fair, we have to throw in, just today... we lost Richard Hatch of both Battlestar... three of the four Battlestar Galacticas. How about that?
Sure. Because, let's go with that.
Because we have the original, we have that ever-popular Battlestar Galactica 1980 that lasted how many episodes?
We do not speak of Battlestar Galactica 1980.
Oh, we don't?
Well, you know, it's one of those things we'd like to ignore. I think they tried to ignore.
Well, yeah. But yes, and as well as the reboot, which...
The reboot, and then there's something new. But yeah, so Richard Hatch, actually, just real quick, I did actually meet the man.
Yeah.
I took an acting class from him many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he was a nice guy. Mm-hmm. An interesting dude, as one person recently put it. And then last week, we also lost John Hurt.
Ah, yes.
Who was, of course, in so many significant... works that have pertained to geek culture, from Doctor Who to Alien to Harry Potter, and that's just scratching the surface.
And that's just off the top of our heads, yeah. And that's just within I guess Alien was,
you know, a lot of stuff that set the pace for a lot of other things he was involved with.
Well, and frankly, he spoofed himself in, was it Spaceballs?
Yes. So he had a sense of humor about it all. But, yeah, looking, again, back at last year, I mean, I can only imagine how long the in memoriam portion of this year's Oscars is going to be. Not that I'm going to watch it because Oscar's so boring.
Well, yes. It's less white.
Much less white this year, but oh so boring.
Yeah, well, like many other things, kind of like the sporting event that I think happened this last weekend, it's one of those things where I'll just wait until the next morning and kind of go, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So...
Getting into the nitty-gritty now of 2017. Well, 2016.
Yes.
We have to do the time-honored tradition of declaring what we felt the best of 2016 was.
Oh, Lord.
We're not going to try and do, you know, on Don't Read the Latin, we did top 10 lists, and that's just, no, that'll just hurt us.
No.
So let's talk about what, let's start with this. What was the best movie you saw in 2016?
You talk for a minute. I'm going to think, because okay, that's going to take some doing.
Well, for me, and it's pretty straightforward for me, because I've taken a lot of time to think about it, and I was
thanks for the advance warning.
I was geared for that.
Yeah.
No, I'd been thinking about it since like the end of the year of, well, what was my favorite movie of the year, and I'm standing by my favorite movie of the year was Moana.
Yeah.
And I don't know, did you ever get a chance to finally see it?
Oh, yeah. No, no. I saw it at the Nice Theater up here in Linwood, where it's just, you know, the seats and the recliners and everything like that. But no, Moana's incredible. I think my wife put it best when she said that that the lyric, not just the fact that it's a princess movie without a love story.
Yeah.
That is incredible in its own right. But in her words, what got her was that the lyrics were more interesting. There was more meat to them. And I think partly because it was Lin-Manuel Miranda that was doing a lot of the writing. But it did. It really brought you in and gave you more to sink your teeth into, instead of just, you know, you think about let it go versus when there's a line where the sun was the ski. Da, da, and well, just so much.
And I think, again, that shows, well, there's a reason the man won a Pulitzer.
Yes.
And he's acknowledged as a musical genius already. And of course, if he wins the Oscar for Moana, which he's up for, I think we talked about this last time, he'll have the PGOT.
Yeah, which I think there's, what, five people? Six?
He'll be the third.
Third! Nice!
It is a rarefied company.
Yes.
And Hammerstein was the last person who accomplished that. A lot of people have talked about, the depths of his lyric, the intricacy of his, not just his rhyming scheme, but the fact that he's keeping the story moving with his songs. And so, the songs were an important portion of it. Even though it's an animated movie, the fact that there was no whitewashing in the cast, they were all, even though they weren't all the same type of Polynesian, they were all Polynesian. You had Samoans and Hawaiians and Maori.
Well, and part of that is simply because they're talking about their roots, which is part of the Polynesian diaspora, which is them going out and becoming Maori and and Hawaiian and Samoan and da-da-da-da. So, no, it was inspired casting, beautiful, that there's a gift set that's floating around out there of just the hair, Moana's hair and Maui's hair and all these little tidbits that, I mean, fade back. How many years ago did we see Final Fantasy?
Yeah.
Which was all CGI and nobody had hair because it's the hardest thing in the world to animate.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, Moana's hair deserves an honorable mention.
Well, there was times when they couldn't do water.
Yeah.
And this movie is all about water.
Oh my, yes.
They couldn't do fire. A lot of these things were beyond CGI at one point. So it shows how the art form went. But then there's also, like you said, it's encompassing the Polynesian cultures. I like that they used Maui, who is a mythological figure across many Polynesian cultures. So that's a nice tie-in for that. And I heard some people complain, well, it's not any one Polynesian culture. But a lot of people said, yeah, but the fact that Polynesian culture is getting honored.
Yeah.
Dwayne Johnson said in an interview, he was brought to tears many times just for the thought of how his culture was being honored.
Yeah.
By this movie and why he was so full throttle enthusiastic to do it. So yeah, it's for me, absolutely, it's my favorite movie of the year. After that, I will say I really enjoyed Rogue One.
Oh, of course.
And I think because how much it tied in with the overall Star Wars mythology.
Yes.
And tied up. It was like, let's tidy up some of the loose ends of Star Wars.
to be fair, I am going to be just the, I'm going to be the Statler and Waldorf here for just a brief moment and say that, so Star Wars came out in 1977.
Correct.
And it's 2016, now 2017. Mm-hmm. So we're talking 40 years. That's a pretty impressive retcon.
Yeah.
So you can say tied everything up nicely, or you can say retcon. But in the other case, yes, by all means, Rogue One was an amazing, amazing movie.
Well, if it's a retcon, it's my favorite kind of retcon.
Yeah.
Which is the retcon that goes in but doesn't actually change the original work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to accept, oh, well, this thing, we'll have to just pretend this thing never happened in the first movie for this to work. No, it's saying, all right, we're going to take all these elements from the first movie and we're going to add layers to it you didn't realize were there.
Yes. And frankly, for a franchise that literally coined the term hand wave, mm-hmm. as far as you don't need to see our identification, mm-hmm. as a shorthand for bad retcon job, mm-hmm. they didn't need to do it.
No, and they didn't. It was great.
And frankly, I will toss in one extra little tidbit that I just realized today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That Rogue One, mm-hmm. I mean, this is, you know, longtime D&D player. You got my back on this one. When was the last time that you saw a monk warrior pairing where the monk was the one that was running in and messing stuff up and the warrior was the one going, dude, really? Wait, come back. Wait, stop. Not now.
Yeah. Well, somebody put out that fit a lot of very iconic Asian cinema characters.
It does. At the same time, there is no amount of money or other proof that you could provide that isn't going to convince me that those two weren't married.
Oh, that's the constant meme, and I'm fine with that one.
I am totally fine with that one because they bicker just like my wife and I do. It's wonderful though. I agree. Rogue One was an amazing, amazing show.
Although, one thing I want to point out, just real quick to tidy up Rogue One. I was listening to an interview last week with Nathan Fillion. It was The Nerdist, and they asked him, because he had been at the Rogue One premiere,
mm-hmm.
and so he was asked, would you want to be in a franchise like that? And he said, oh, I'd love to be in an ongoing franchise like this, or do a Pixar film, and he lists up a few other things he'd like to do. He said, the only problem is Alan Tudyk's done them all first.
Yes. Which is an incredibly nice tie-in, seeing as Alan Tudyk was in Moana.
yeah, Alan's had a pretty good year when you think about it.
Oh, he has had an incredibly good year. So now that I've had a chance to think, mm-hmm. thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, yes, Moana knocked my socks off. Rogue One was an incredible grown-ups entry into the Star Wars universe. Because
mm-hmm.
it's not for little kids. Dear God, it's not for kids. Arrival.
Which is one I have not yet seen.
Which is science fiction that... Okay, so a million years ago, back when rocks were soft and dirt was new, Ghost came out with Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore, and everyone was like, oh, it's so wonderful, and so this and that and this other thing. And it was nice, but it was just a wee bit trite for my taste. Around the same time, there was this movie that came out called Truly, Madly, Deeply.
Right.
Which was Alan Rickman, mm-hmm. a.k.a. Snape, a.k.a. yet another 2016 victim. But Truly, Madly, Deeply was the thinking person's Ghost.
Right.
And so in some senses, you know, Arrival is that meaty sort of sci-fi that you can sink your teeth into. As far as movies in general, I really, really enjoyed Hidden Figures. I got to see that a couple weeks ago with my wife, and it knocked me through the back wall. It was really, I mean... Some of it, yes, is conflated. Yes, some of it is for expediency or for dramatic tension. Part of me wants to ask how much of a difference that would have made if we could send that movie back in time 50 years and have people see it then so they knew what people were doing then, not, you know, send their grandkids to see it. Mm. So, no, Hidden Figures is... I think it's an important scientific movie.
Mm-hmm.
I also enjoyed the fact that it was a little weird seeing what's-his-bucket Sheldon from The Big Bang Theory. Well, I want to say playing a jerk, but he was just playing a different sort of jerk. So there's that.
Yeah.
Going back to the summer, though, you know, I really got to say, Doctor Strange did nothing for me.
I enjoyed Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
It was not the... I enjoyed it.
Okay.
That's you know, it was a good entry into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the best. I think we actually, earlier in the year, had a much better entry with Captain America Civil War.
Yeah. No, of course.
Which is one of the strongest movies the franchise has had. Just because it was... Everything in that movie was earned from previous movies.
Yes.
It was really tying together, to me, a lot of the Marvel Cinematic Universe up to that point.
True.
And plus we had the introduction of two very significant characters who were introduced in this movie prior to getting their own movies. Now, one of them, of course, is Spider-Man. But this is the MCU Spider-Man.
Right.
But this was still his introduction. But also you got the Black Panther.
Which was, you gotta, yeah, he was amazing.
Who to me, I still argue the Black Panther was the one truly heroic character in the movie.
Really?
Well, I feel he had the most growth,
okay,
if nothing else, because his arc was going from wanting revenge for his father's death to wanting to see justice done without taking a life.
True.
Because he had the choice of letting the villain die and went, no, you must face justice,
yeah,
for what you did. And it's sort of showing him going from angry son to the man who must be king. And so it's a great arc for them to bounce off to when he gets his own film, which I know they're working on now.
They're working on, and file under Shut Up and Take My Money.
Yeah.
Thinking of other ones that are in the works, because I think there was just an announcement today or yesterday of John Boyega put out a new little teaser for Pacific Rim 2.
Yeah.
See a little picture of him saying, I am Pentecost, and it's kind of like, oh, ho, 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 ho.
That's going to be interesting. Yeah, they're building on a lot of good things. It's going to be interesting to see what this year gives us in film.
Yes.
We've got a lot of good stuff coming down the pike, but that'll be for future episodes.
Yes.
Anything else on film in 2016 you want to touch on?
Well, you know, just to think of a couple, because there's the ones that everyone kind of points out. You know, we have given Batman versus Superman more than enough airtime. It can be dustbinned. I'm sorry.
I think the best I can say is that is probably is one of the worst movies I saw this last year.
2016, we also got the Ghostbusters reboot, which was wonderful. It was incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, frankly, you know, it's nice to know that some of the people in that are still going to be working for quite some time. You know, there was the Suicide Squad, which, while it was a little too violent for me, truth to tell, there was a couple spots in that kind of squicked me out. I did enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one that... springs to mind, Deadpool. I mean, we can't look at 2016 and talk sci-fi and comics and not talk about the awesomeness that was Ryan Reynolds in Deadpool.
Well, and I think Deadpool, first off, in a lot of ways, was that unexpected success. And it just because it was the perfect moment of the studio just deciding they didn't care enough and let Ryan do what he wanted to do.
And he ran with it.
And his burning desire to do a true to the comics Deadpool.
Yep.
And which is exactly what we got, and it was exactly what the audience wanted. And suddenly it's making all the money at that time, and it's got Fox completely rethinking their entire strategy for the X films, because the big X film was supposed to be X-Men Apocalypse.
Yawn.
Which did okay, but didn't do what they want, but they're like, Deadpool, on the other hand, and they told them, we can go outside of the box, and hence witness the trailers we are now seeing for Logan.
Yeah.
Which, to my, because everyone was like, oh, they're going to start doing R-rated for R-rated sake. And Logan will be R-rated, but at least they're taking a lesson. Okay, we can be R-rated to tell our story.
Yes.
because Logan is not another Deadpool. It's going the polar opposite, but true to the story they're adapting.
I was going to say, as opposed to that one Wolverine origin story a couple years ago, when it was he and Liv Schreiber and the angst.
Well, and the bad version of Deadpool.
Yeah, well, I was going to skim over that part.
Well, you know, you brought it, but it is show they were still trying to fit within their little box.
Mm-hmm.
And so if Deadpool showed nothing, it showed Fox, you know what? Stretch.
Yeah.
Be courageous to do something. And I got to tell you, I've seen the trailers for Logan. I'm like, yeah, they're going to get my butt in that seat.
Yeah.
And I have not seen, I did not see Wolverine, the second solo Wolverine movie, and I did not see X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Because it didn't interest me. Logan, on the other hand, interests me.
Well, and I got to give Hugh Jackman props. He has run that for a good long while now. This will be what the, I'm trying to think, 6th, 7th, 8th?
If you count the 2 Wolverine movies, 4 or 5 X-Men movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then this, about 7th, 8th. Again, the point is Deadpool opened a door of, you know, let's be willing to take some more chances, not just be cookie cutter. And we'll see where they take it from there. I'm really interested to see what else they're going to try and accomplish. You've got an X-Men TV show that's premiering this week.
Yeah.
Legion, which I'm going to check out. I'm very curious if they're going to try and tie into the cinematic X-Men movies or if it's going to be its own thing.
You got to admit it. It's worked for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and it seems to be working for Powerless.
Yeah, so I will check it out. Plus, I like the actor. He was the lead on Downton Abbey for the first 2 seasons. And starred in one of the great underrated films of 2015, The Guest.
Okay.
So,
It's still surreal when stuff like that bubbles up. I was watching some sort of costume drama with my wife a couple weeks ago, and Bill Compton from True Blood shows up in his native British accent. And I'm like, what are you doing? Get back to Louisiana. You're king of Louisiana.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, ugh.
So this does open the door, though. So we've been talking about film.
Yes.
Let's talk about TV.
You go right ahead. I still have not seen that much television. I finally, actually, since last we saw one another, finally got to see season 6 of Game of Thrones.
All right.
I have a new favorite character.
Okay.
I have a new favorite character in Game of Thrones, and he's a dog.
So I think easily the best thing I saw on TV this last year.
Yeah.
And again, TV has really become the writer's medium. And it's where people will experiment. And I am counting, when I talk TV, I am counting streaming media. So when you talk TV, you have to count Amazon Prime and you have to count Netflix. And there was a lot of good stuff this last year.
I've been hearing incredible things about The Expanse. That is almost enough to get me to talk me into springing for it because I want to see The Expanse.
Expanse season 1 was an excellent series.
Yeah.
The best series. If I had to say, okay, this was the best thing on TV I saw last year, I would have to hands down say it was Westworld.
Oh yeah.
And talk about an unexpected source of riches. Because we're talking about a TV series based on a 1970s sci-fi film.
Let's give it its full credit. A 1970s bad science fiction.
But a classic. But iconic mostly for the Yul Brynner character.
I was going to say, THX 1138 is a classic science fiction movie. It doesn't make it any better. Right.
So, but taking, you know, the core concept and running it in a whole different direction. Westworld was one of the smartest scripts I saw in a long time, in part because the writers decided to, it's always a blessing when the writers decide, let's assume our audience are smart people.
Yes.
And can handle deeper concepts and can handle creative narrative flow.
Yeah. Well, you got to admit, I mean, this, if 2016, well, if 2016 can have kind of a summary or even just when the last couple of years, it's been the idea of let's give people something that they can sink their teeth into.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to the Battlestar reboot that we were talking about earlier, the Star Wars where it's like, oh, wow, this is for grown-ups. The television long form like in Westworld. And the other one, to be honest, I'll just touch on it and we can get back to TV. Mm-hmm. But what they've been doing with the Hanna-Barbera properties.
We're going to get there.
Okay.
That's coming up.
All right.
That is coming up.
Just want to make sure that that's on the docket.
It is on the docket.
So TV.
So TV, yeah. Westworld, also just an embarrassment of riches in the actors.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, Thady Newton made such an impression on people mm-hmm. from Westworld that there is a vocal fan base. Now that Peter Capaldi has announced this is his final season as the Doctor.
Ah, yes.
She is one of the people, because she's British.
Yes.
And it's like, she killed it so hard in Westworld. A lot of people are saying, have you considered Thady Newton as the Doctor? There's a push for, I know obviously Hayley Atwell has said she'd like to do, there's a real strong push for not a white dude Doctor.
I am 100% in favor of not a white dude Doctor. Just like I was 100% in favor of Idris Elba taking on James Bond.
Yeah.
But the, I think all things being equal, given a choice between Thady Newton and, who was it you just said?
Hayley Atwell.
And Hayley Atwell. I would still go to more towards, Thady myself,
mm-hmm.
simply because it also, you know, it adds a little more color into the mix. And frankly, I mean, how long ago was it when, the professor was played by a woman. There was one of the Christmas specials, wasn't it?
Oh, you know, well, you mean the Master?
The Master, yeah.
Yes,
sorry.
The current incarnation of the Master is female.
Yeah.
Michelle Gomez.
Yeah.
So Thady, now I briefly on Doctor Who, Richard Ayoade from the IT Crowd,
okay,
is another name that is being bandied about, and he is black.
Mm-hmm.
So, a brilliant comedian, would be an excellent choice for the Doctor.
Yeah.
But I do, yeah, but Thady Newton, just her performance in Westworld. And then you've got, getting back to Westworld, you've got James Marsden from the X-Men franchise getting a chance to
among other things, but
yeah,
yes.
Evelyn Rachel Wood.
Who was amazing.
And that's not even getting into Anthony Hopkins and Jeffrey Wright.
Oh, by the way.
You know, you start looking at this cast and Ed Harris.
Yeah.
It just, you go down the list. It's like, but again, it's these smarter, you know, and it's the 13 episode series
mm-hmm.
because they can tell tight stories and they're getting the interest of these stellar actors because they look at the material and go, oh, I can do something with this.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you think about it. I mean, The one of the few things that I remember from back in the theater days,
mm-hmm.
generally speaking, if you're talking about a shooting script, one page, an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper
mm-hmm.
is approximately 1 minute on screen.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a 500 page book. You ain't going to have a 500 page. You ain't going to have a 500 minute movie. Yeah. Unless, you know, you're Peter Jackson and pad the hell out of The Hobbit. But to be able to put it into long-form TV, so you have 10 episodes, 13 episodes, so mm-hmm. you've got 600 minutes,
yeah,
or 720 minutes to tell a story, yeah, you can do that. Right. Rock with your bad self.
So, yeah, absolutely. I think the second best that I saw in the year, and it's a close second mm-hmm. best, was Luke Cage.
Yes.
Again, the same thing. Mm-hmm. The long-form series, you know, telling an intricate story over 13 episodes. But where Westworld was being very creative in its narrative form, and with its level of philosophy, you had Luke Cage, which was steeped in racial identity
mm-hmm.
and in social conscience.
Yeah.
And he managed to do it without ever quite dipping into preaching.
Oh, it was leading by example. It doesn't need to preach.
Yeah. So, and I had one person who said their feeling of Luke Cage was, this wasn't a show that was made. This was a show that was crafted.
Yes.
So, and again, it's, but notice neither of these were mainstream network shows.
Nope.
So HBO is always been sort of a repository. You know, they will take chances. They will do the deeper scripts. But Netflix is also, I mean, Netflix, if you look at the last year Netflix had, you had Luke Cage, but you also had Stranger Things. Netflix is, and Netflix is far more concerned about, are we, I mean, they get ratings and they pay attention to their ratings, but they also pay attention to, are we driving the narrative? Are people talking about our show?
Oh my, yes.
And, you know, between the shows we've been talking about, people talked about them. They've had influence.
Frankly, I'm simply going to dip my little toe into the water and jump right back out to the safety of geekdom. All I have to say is I will be very interested to see what House of Cards does, given other things that may or may not have happened in 2016.
That's going to be very interesting. I mean, there's, but yeah, so it, this is we're definitely in a renaissance of this kind of storytelling.
Yep.
And even the networks, the straight up networks, are playing with it. NBC, you know, it didn't last as long, but I mean, NBC did Hannibal. So it shows they were willing to take a shot at something.
Hey, they certainly sunk their teeth in that
yeah.
one. Sorry. So, it was right there. It was low-hanging fruit.
Yeah. So, and it, you know, we still get a fair amount of, you know, let's be honest, network dreck.
Of course.
But, you know, even I mean, no one's immune to dreck. One of the, there was a show I started, I had the rare case of, I started one and went, couldn't get through the first episode, the OA.
Yeah.
On Netflix. I know a lot of people love it. It I could not grasp my head around it. And again, I think it's a, they were trying for deep. Yeah.
Well, but the thing of it is, though, is that, and this is something that I have said for a very long time, and you can probably mouth the words along with me. Because we have so many options, you know, there's how many hundreds of television stations out there, not just the three that we grew up with or four that we grew up with back in the day, but you have multiple platforms and you have multiple opportunities, and you've got amateurs coming up with a rock solid, amazing stuff. Save Doug Eiffel, for God's sake.
I'm getting ahead of myself,
but it all boils back to the cream rises. People will find the good stuff, and to steal from Will Wheaton, it's not what you love, it's how you love it.
Yeah.
And you want to share it, and you want to say, oh, you like that one? You'll like these 12, too.
Yeah.
So.
So, yeah, I think we've, the only other thing I'll say with TV is, yeah, there have been a lot of great comic book shows on TV.
Oh, my, yes.
And a lot of them are very enjoyable. And we've talked a lot about the DC Universe stuff on TV and the Marvel stuff on TV. And a lot of it's good, a lot of it's fun. I think the reason it didn't kind of drive the narrative the way these other shows we're talking about is they are taking the place in a lot of ways of what comic books were for us.
Yeah.
In the era, they are, you know, they are fun entertainment. They tell a story, we get engaged, but you know they on the other hand aren't necessarily going to be the deep ride, and not everything should be the deep ride.
Not everything needs to. You have to have a little, you know, a little something to cleanse the palate every once in a while. And frankly, it's nice to be able to have something that you can drop into, watch one episode, and you don't need 15 minutes of backstory.
Right.
You know, previously on blah 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 blah, and get, you know, oh, who's that? Oh, well, he's this person. No, just tell me a story. Entertain me for a half an hour.
So, speaking of comic books.
Yes.
Let's talk about comic books.
Oh, my.
So I think the first thing, before we get into the really deep stuff,
mm-hmm.
One of the interesting stories this year was the complete reversal of fortunes of Marvel and DC.
Yes.
Because coming into the year, Marvel was clearly on top of the heap.
Oh my.
They had almost 50% of the market share. And, you know, DC had less than 25.
Yep.
And it was a rough road. And it looked like Marvel was going to hold on to that lead.
Nope.
And then the summer happened. And the thing is, it's really easy to see what happened and why.
I can sum it up in two words. Nazi cap.
You know, interestingly, that was more of a symptom
Really?
I think the larger problem. Okay. Yeah, Nazi Captain America did not help.
No.
But what really killed it was both companies had events.
Yeah.
Over at DC, they had DC Rebirth, which we'll touch on in a second. And at Marvel, they had Civil War II, which was clearly an attempt to cash in on the movie Civil War. Now, here's the thing. We talked about it when we were talking about movies, how Captain America Civil War was a great Marvel movie and tied up a lot of stuff. It is also heads and above superior to the comic series that spawned it.
Of course.
Because, frankly, the original Civil War series was very badly written, very ham-fisted, and even though you were supposed to have the idea of, well, both Cap and Iron Man have points, it was very clear that Iron Man was the villain in the Civil War comic. Come to the movie, and no, honest to God, they are both making salient points. They are two sides of an argument, and it really played up with the idea that neither's completely right and neither is completely wrong. Meaning it was a much more nuanced story.
Yes.
So, knowing that the comics had that problem, the comics do Civil War II. And the first thing to decide is, well, we're not going to make the mistake we made last time. We're not going to make Iron Man the villain. The problem was the whole, well, let's have both sides have good points. No, they still didn't learn that lesson. It's just this time it wasn't Iron Man that was in the wrong. It was Captain Marvel.
Okay.
And without getting in too deep, it's they get a source of the ability to predict the future that they're convinced is almost 100% accurate. And so Captain Marvel starts going on a campaign to preemptively stop events, which is a slippery slope.
I'm sorry, Philip K. Dick called. He wants his plot line back.
Yeah, and it ended up casting a character that a lot of people have really fallen in love and embraced, and gave her, let's not mince words, gave her fascist tendencies all of a sudden.
Oh yeah.
And the audience rejected it in droves.
Well, and you think about it, because frankly, I mean, I do not know, because I am not soaking in it. I have not, I am not a woman. I have not had to deal with the things that women, especially women in geek culture, have had to deal with. That said, I have seen Captain Marvel be embraced by a large number of women, mm-hmm. and has really drawn a lot of women, not just into geek culture, but into out and loud and obvious geek culture. Mm-hmm. And for that, I am incredibly grateful. And so, yeah, to turn around and take a well-loved character like Captain Marvel, like Captain America, and kind of, I mean, throw them under the bus.
Yeah.
As far as some of these things are concerned, I mean, frankly, it's like the Batman versus Superman thing of, why do we have to... Let's let good guys be good guys.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we now turn our eye to DC Comics,
who has managed to come out ahead a year later.
So what DC did was they put out Rebirth.
Yes.
Which was their basically admission, well, New 52 didn't work.
Nope.
So clearly we have to fix it.
Yes.
And the fix was, A, just some of the most brilliant writing they've done in recent years. And their first mandate was, it's time for Superman to be a hero again.
Excellent. We approve.
And they did it in a very clever way. And we actually talked about the mechanism they did it with, in that they showed in one of their stories that the Superman of the previous incarnation of the DC Universe somehow ended up in the new one with Lois, his wife, and their son, John.
Okay, then.
So suddenly you've got that Superman and the Superman of the current DC Universe... in saving it, he ended up dying.
Okay.
But as he was dying, he met the other Superman, and there was an agreement, okay, well, we need a Superman. And so the Superman of the current DC Universe is the pre-New 52 Superman again.
Oh, nice.
And the Superboy is his son.
Nice.
But this is the much more straightforward Kansas farm boy, you know, Boy Scout, believes in truth, justice, and the American way. Ernest is all hell, Superman, again.
I love it.
And, yeah, and the fans went, okay, the everyone has agreed, this is one of the best-written Superman series in years.
Yeah.
The trade paperback is just flying off the... They just recently released the collection of the first set.
Yeah.
Flying off the shelves, because it's the Superman the audience wanted.
Exactly.
And going with that, they have decided, okay, well, let's look at the rest of... So what they did is they're not so much rebooting the New 52 as going, here's why it became flawed. Someone manipulated time and erased 10 years. But because weirdness with time was always a complaint, instead of ignoring it, they said, no, we're going to make it the central problem. So they're taking one of the flaws of New 52, making it a plot point, and now working to correct it within the story.
Okay.
Going to give them credit for not hiding their head in the sand. And they did it by bringing back a beloved character that had been erased, Wally West, the second Flash. But also, they are teasing the Watchmen characters. Which a lot of people at first were like, oh, how dare they bring the Watchmen characters in? But the fact that they're doing it interestingly.
Yes.
They're doing it with good writing. You know, yeah, there's always going to be the feud with Alan Moore. But the suggestion, and they still haven't come out and said it outright, but the intimation is the person manipulating with time was Dr. Manhattan.
Well.
And also apparently Ozymandias is out there somewhere.
I love it.
But the point is, they took, you know, everything the fans were complaining about and went, all right, we hear you. How about this? And the fans went, yes, this is what we wanted. Thank you.
That will do nicely. Thank you.
If you keep doing this, we will buy your books.
Yeah.
And hence you've got, you know, the DC rose because, again, they shifted positions because Marvel alienated the fans. DC made them happy.
Yes.
And this doesn't even get into what has been, well, okay, so DC's overall sales have improved. But the thing DC did that actually touched the cultural narrative isn't even their main line.
Nope.
So for those of you who listen who aren't aware of this, DC Comics recently acquired the license to do several of the old Hanna-Barbera cartoon properties.
I love it. When you first told me this, I was like, you have got to be kidding me. What in the world are they going to do with this?
So what they ended up doing, and I guess Hanna-Barbera said, sure, go for it, is they're taking these characters and adding more relevance socially to them. So you have the big one everyone talks. So everyone's noticing, like, wacky races. They've set it in a Mad Max setting. I was like, what? And what is this dark and gritty Johnny Quest thing going on? But what captured people was the Flintstones.
Yep.
For those of you who have not heard of the DC Comics current Flintstone series, it is taking the Flintstones, the artwork, they are not using the old art style. Fred and Barney look much more like closer to realistic humans. You can see Fred's neck.
Oh, hey. He has one?
Yeah. So they are looking more realistic, and they are dealing with greater social issues. And when I say social issues, things like, so they are playing the idea that the cavemen, yes, they suddenly built a what looks like modern Stone Age society, but this is only a recent development.
Yes.
And things like, Fred used to be part of a nomadic tribe before they settled down in Bedrock. The Buffalo Lodge, which was always a big deal in the cartoon as just their lodge, they're like the Elks. Yeah. Turns out the Buffalo Lodge in the comics is a veterans organization.
Yep.
And that Fred and Barney are veterans of a war that had a Vietnam-like effect on the soldiers. And that Yabba Dabba Do is a mantra their counselor gives them to say when they're dealing with their PTSD trauma.
Okay. And I am going to jump in and let's call a spade a damn shovel here for just a quick second. Mm. Is it a Vietnam-like quality or was it an Afghanistan-Iraq quality? quality.
Probably take your pick.
Yeah.
But the other thing, one of the brilliant stories they did recently was they tackled gay marriage in the most interesting way possible. Because in this society, marriage itself is a new concept. And Fred and Wilma being married is considered socially radical.
Really? How dare you?
Get back to the sex cave like God, like Grog intended. That's an actual line from the comic.
Of course it is.
And so Fred goes to a counseling group to do, you know, about his marriage. Why did you get married? You know, what? And you're really thinking about why he did it. Well, the group that approved his marriage, two members of Fred's nomadic tribe, Adam and Steve.
They went there.
They did and decided they want to get married. And the priest was like, no way. And Fred's like, hey, Adam and Steve were an important part of my tribe. They took care of me when my mother couldn't because it was a hard life and the non-breeders were an important part of our society.
Yes.
And I refuse to belong to any group that will not accept them.
Perfect.
And it was, yes, it was beautiful. It was
Fred, the intersectional ally. Who can ask for more?
And so that's, and yeah, again, moving the social narrative. Everyone's talking about the Flintstones.
They're talking about the Flintstones for something. Yes, it's wonderful. It's my head exploding.
And it's playing with, we know these characters from our childhood, but putting them in a new setting.
Uh-huh.
Suddenly they're exploring the inner life of the animal appliances. So now the other thing that's coming out now, since clearly they figured they're onto something.
Yeah.
The next book that is coming out, and it's one of those, somebody went, literally a quote from a friend of mine online was, oh my God, DC's got me wanting to buy a Snagglepuss comic book. Because they're about to introduce Snagglepuss, who, of course, Heavens to Murgatroyd, Exit Stage Left, set in the 1950s.
Uh-huh.
And Snagglepuss is being played as a gay, southern dandy Broadway playwright.
That we won't name because for legal issues.
But the idea is they're going to explore gay Broadway culture of the 50s and the writers of that era.
Well, and specifically the writers, like dealing with the whole McCarthy era, Blacklist, mm-hmm. and you know, the purge against homosexuals and against communists and leftists and everyone.
I mean, there is the page that they have released as their teaser, mm-hmm. shows Snagglepuss talking to a character. I think there were these cartoon pup, a dad and a doggy daddy and his son.
Mm-hmm.
So he's talking to the son and he's talking about what it means to be a writer. But the thing is, why should we fight if we can't win? And Snagglepuss says, son, sometimes you don't fight a fight because you think you can win. Sometimes you fight a fight because somebody has to fight the fight.
Yeah.
And that's what DC Comics is doing right now with the Hanna-Barbera characters. So that if the comic story of 2016 is not the reversal of fortune of DC versus Marvel. It is DC going there and taking these classic cartoon characters and making them relevant in the modern era.
Yes. When we first started talking about this and started seeing some of the stuff that's coming out, I'm really excited. I have to say the one thing that does kind of keep me up nights, I'm wondering what they're going to do with Hong Kong Fooey.
Well, will he be his own character or will he be a side character somewhere else? Or will he explore racial issues?
He could very well explore racial issues. Grape Ape could be along the same lines, but...
Well, here's the thing. The right now, the one thing I'll say is the writers are both aware and smart.
Yeah.
I at this point, with what they've done so far, if they do pick up Hong Kong Fooey or a character like that, I'm at least going to give them a chance because they haven't disappointed me yet.
Oh, well.
So, and the other thing is the artwork on these books, if you get a chance to see them, anyone listening, I recommend Googling these. And looking, it's different than the old style.
Yeah.
It's amazing art. And so, yeah, that's what we have to say on comics.
Cool.
So moving on to podcasts.
Yes.
I think we agree that right now the best podcast out there for a narrative podcast is absolutely Wolf 359.
Oh, hell yes. Above and away.
And again, it's smart writing. It's moving the medium.
Yes.
And that's the important thing. I think a lot of other narrative shows that are coming up, a lot of these shows have been taking their cues from either Serial or from Welcome to Night Vale.
Well, Night Vale, I mean, they really kind of, they were the beachhead.
Yeah.
You know, they've gone a long way towards establishing this as, oh yes, you can do this.
Yeah.
But no, Wolf 359, amazing. Black Tapes. You said that there's a new season coming out?
Black Tapes is still working on stuff. So Black Tapes is of the podcasts inspired by Serial.
Okay.
I think Black Tapes is easily the best. And again, there's a narrative, because it's also got a narrative going on within it. And it, frankly, is just a very effective horror story.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, everyone can try the jump scare horror. We're going to be to do effective, make you uneasy, is a challenge, and it is doing it with a deft hand.
Well, and frankly, to do it using old school with just your voice, with just some sound effects,
yeah,
not being able to do a literal jump scare with like what you see with in the movies. This is. Crawling into your brain and making and running with it.
So yeah, those I mean, just for the narrative podcasts, I absolutely highly recommend. Obviously, Wolf 359. Even though I discovered it after starting to work on creating Family Skeletons ourselves, Wolf 359 ended up informing a lot of the work that ended up going into what we're trying to create, which we're still working on. All those things that prevented us from doing a podcast for a month,
yeah,
that's been interfering in trying to get that show up and running as well. But we're back on track. My hope is that we will be able to premiere sometime in 2017.
Halloween sounds like a lovely time to aim
for.
We
might actually shoot for that. So, yeah. But anyway, as for non-narrative podcasts, part of that is there's so many. With the podcast right now,
that's kind of a knowing wink and a nod, seeing as we are a non-narrative podcast.
We are a non-narrative podcast. Yeah, I mean, we try, we've got Don't Read the Latin. I think part of it is with podcasts these days, like you said earlier, cream rises.
Yep.
Go out there and find, what you like. I know for stuff I listen to, I'm still a big fan of The Nerdist. Not quite narrative, not quite non-narrative. The Billy West podcast, which its only flaw is it puts out episodes infrequently. But I think that's more of a factor of the linchpin of the series is Billy West, who's the most in-demand voice actor in Hollywood
just
right
about,
now.
Yeah, how about that?
The man is a frightening talent. If you've never really dived into the abilities of Billy West. This is a man known for taking a script where he has four characters all voiced by him having a conversation, doing it all in one take.
Yep.
And having people go, how did they filter your voice? They didn't. He is good enough. He can make a robot sound or do Stephen Hawking's mechanical voice just with a microphone.
Nice.
That's this man's. He can do all of Mel Blanc's characters. He obviously Futurama, he was Ren and Stimpy.
I was gonna say, isn't he coming to Emerald City this year? I could have sworn
he might. He's been before, but he might. He is just one of the amazing talents, and he's getting other voice actors to show up on the show now,
of course.
So that's interesting just to hear, especially because most podcasts he's doing all the characters, and after a while it's just you start going, Clearly, you're in a class by yourself.
Indeed.
But just if you're ever interested in that kind of thing, it's a good podcast to listen to. Outside of that, I would say I think the real answer is explore.
Oh, yeah.
If you've got an interest, I promise you, if you've got an interest, there's a podcast for it.
Oh.
If your interest doesn't have a podcast, you know what? Get a microphone and a copy of Audacity.
Well, I gotta say, because the most of the stuff that I have listened to, because aside from Wolf 359, I'm sorry, Chris Hardwick is a good person in a lot of ways. I've really stopped listening to the Nerdist. It really kind of, maybe it's just the ones that I'm selecting, but it always kind of sits with me a little wrong. But there are other options. I mean, I started thinking about this because, so we have Fanboy News Network, which will soon give rise to Family Skeletons. There's Don't Read the Latin. Mm-hmm. There's just within our circle of two of us and how many people we know. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. There's Jay and Miles.
Jay and Miles, Explain the X-Men, where I know Jay.
Yeah.
I've met Jay at a couple conventions. There is a Dame Walks Into My Office, which is a podcast by a friend of mine who is a real life private investigator.
Yeah.
But is trying to tell stories of female friends of his. There is, I'm trying to think of Handsome Boyfriend Jim's podcast. He's going to kill me right now.
You vamp for a second. I'll talk about some of the ones that have amazed me recently. Shout out to my friend Tim, who does both All Comics Considered, who I would love to try and see if we could get him on for kind of a cooperative crossover sort of nerdy event. He also does one called Race Invaders, which is talking about, how about that? Race in 21st century Pacific Northwest. And the other one that I have been listening to lately has been Buddhist Geeks, which has been had some really interesting, thoughtful things to say. If they ever decide to listen to this, simply because we mentioned in the liner notes, guys, really, you need to point out when something is part one of however we can.
Yeah. Fire When Ready.
Fire When Ready.
Is Jim's, his Star Wars Armada podcast.
This isn't Jim of...
who used to work with at Emerald City Comic Con. Yes.
Oh, wow. I did not realize. Yes.
He whose Tumblr is Famous People Hate Me. He likes to go to conventions and have pictures of celebrities disdaining him or like physically striking him. It's very interesting.
And when you think about the fact that this guy is paying, you know, $40, $50, $60, $70 a pop to have, you know, Carrie Fisher flip him off.
He's dedicated to his shtick. I think the thing about podcasting and why we do it and why I recommend other people do it is it's a medium that gives voice to people.
Yes.
And anyone can do it. And whether you have the 5-digit audience of Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men or whatever we actually happen to be on this podcast, which is much, much smaller.
I'd like to think that it was...
We have probably at least a dozen.
Hey.
If not more, maybe growing. Certain
episodes. I don't know. I just went through a breakup. I don't know if she's listening anymore.
So, if I get Jill on, I can get see a boost. But no, the point is, somebody once said, "What level of audience justifies a podcast?" And the answer was one.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't do a podcast because you're trying to get an audience. Well, some people do. You do a podcast because you want to talk.
Yeah.
You want to get your message out there. And. And if everyone's really lucky, the right audience will find the right podcast.
The right audience will find the right podcast. And frankly, I think if we can pause for just a moment, and I'm sorry, I'm going to drag some of this kicking and screaming into the podcast. Mm-hmm. If there is a theme for 2017, I think I would like it to be you're not alone. And there are people out there who think the way that you do and feel the way that you do about important things of the day. And if you can reach out and say, because we never say it out loud in this podcast, but we're fanboys and we try to talk about cons behaving badly, which translates into, generally speaking, white guys behaving badly. And to speak out to folks and say, you're a good person and you're not alone. And there are these things that we love and we can geek out about. And we get to share them and be excited about them together. And if there's something that you love, you share it with us. And if there's something that we love, we can go, oh, you mean you haven't seen this? And I'm going to wrap it up by saying, and thanks to you and happy birthday, Jeff.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I leveled up recently.
Yes, yes, you certainly did. You're rapidly becoming epic.
And we spent the day playing board games.
Yes.
So with that, now is a good wrap-up point. So thank you very much for those of you that listen to the podcast. We do appreciate it. And we will keep doing this as long as we can. And if you want to drop us a line, we can be found at fanboynewsnetwork.com. Just leave us a note in the comment section. And with that, Daniel and I will see you again very soon.
Happy February.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2017 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.